Welcome to Behind the Smiles with your host, the Queen of Yappy herself, Dr. Gina Dorfman. This is a podcast where we interview some of the biggest leaders in dentistry, learn their stories, and share their motivation. Brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. Book a demo today at yappyapp.com.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Smiles. I am here today with my good old friend, Rohit Garg. Rohit, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Gina. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, absolutely. This was a long time coming. I mean, I sent you an invite like, 6 months ago? And then just a few days ago, you're like, why am I not on your podcast yet? I'm like, I don't know. You just need to get on it. And here we are.
Yeah, I just didn't realize we had to schedule something. I'm like, well, I should just one day show up. And I'm glad we connected at the Voices of Dentistry last week. It was an awesome meeting.
It was.
Met a lot of cool people.
Oh my God, it was the best meeting ever. Okay, yeah. So let's talk about Voices of Dentistry a little bit, because you know what? I just want everyone who's listening and wasn't there, I just want them to be super jealous about missing this incredible meeting. That's going to happen again next year. So, you know, who was the highlight for you?
Man, there were so many people. I would say George and Richard and Matt Greeno. And I'll tell you one thing about George. George Hari, people don't know him. He runs the Shared Practices podcast. He's one of the co-hosts in there. And he reached out to me almost 2.5 years ago when he was still in dental school. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what's this guy doing reaching out to me from dental school? Don't waste my time, go away. And he was pretty persistent, very bright. And he reached out again and we started talking. And it's just incredible what he has built. He has a practice, podcast, BBN users, talks to everybody about the value of numbers. He was great. Obviously, listening to you there was pretty awesome. I loved your talk.
Thank you. I love listening to me. I love listening to me. It's really a great meeting, informative meeting, fun meeting, and it's really, really well organized. So my highlights, if I had to pick one, I mean, I'd never pick. I mean, I obviously enjoyed meeting you. Aaron Elliott sleep apnea, 3D dentist and sleep apnea implementation courses is a good friend of mine, always a highlight of my day. Love seeing her there. She was on a podcast before. She's presented at the meeting previous times. And, we're going to be speaking at another meeting pretty soon. Also, Missy Fryer, who was on a podcast here as well before. Zach from Apex Dental. There were some parties that we all attended, so that was great. Chris Salerno, I enjoyed talking to Chris Salerno so much. He's so smart. Every time I learn something new. So I want to talk about you. Just give me like a real quick sort of introduction into your, sort of journey into dentistry. Why are we here? How did you end up here?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure that out, but I'll tell you what I do know. I'm an engineer by background, right? I had nothing to do with dentistry for 3/4 of my life, or actually 2/3 of my life. I'm an engineer by trade. Was working on medical imaging, medical devices for the longest time. I got married to my lovely wife 17 years ago. And she was in dental school at that time. And even then, I didn't quite get into knowing what dentistry was about till she decided to do a startup. And that was in about 2010. And I got interested in actually 2011 or 2012, and when I realized the potential and the size of the market. Till that time, she had her own career, I had my own career, and I started getting a little bit more involved on a weekly, kind of a monthly basis on what she did. And I realized that the more analytical we got, the more data we had, the better decisions we made. So 2011, 2012, 13, 14, 15, we were growing her office. This is me working full time, and she's working in the practice, obviously, and I have my full time job, and I'm helping analyze the data with her and giving her advice on what she could be doing. I mean, she's her own boss, and she asked me for opinion and advice, and I don't know dentistry, but I know the numbers. I know the trends, and I can analyze that. And I can, of course, at that time, Howard Tran had created an incredible resource. Dental Town was there, and I would read Dental Town, she would read Dental Town, we would correlate the data and then try to. So that was my kind of introduction into dentistry in 2011, 2012 with her new practice. And we grew her practice double digit growth, right? Double digit, sometimes 15%, sometimes 20%. Year over year over year, and we did that from the first year we opened. 2015 is when we started thinking about, well, what we are doing here, decision-making process based on data, there's an opportunity and there's a market for it. And at that time there was, I think there was one company and the other company was just starting to come out. And I realized that there is an opportunity to take this. And one of the things that she kept mentioning was this practice management software. I'm like, this doesn't look like a practice management software. This is a patient management software. You don't have anything that's a practice management software. What you need is a practice management software. But all of these things were called practice management software, OpenDel, practice management software, X, Y, Z. And now there's maybe 100 of them called practice management software, but none of them were managing the practice. Every one of those softwares manage the patient flow. They are basically a scheduling tool, and as they got more features added to it, they were doing claims and e-claims and all that. But that's what they were. They were patient management or your schedule management software. And we realized that there is an opportunity here to really create a practice management software, a business management software. Now, we're nowhere close to making a true practice management software. Nobody does, right?
Cannot be done. Cannot be done. We'll get into this if we have time, but I have people always tell me, why can't we have one software that does everything?
It cannot be done. It cannot be done.
It'll be like China of software. It cannot be done.
I like that analogy. That was one of the things, which is practice management software was lacking. All of them were lacking. And it's not like one is worse than the other. They all have their strengths and weaknesses. But in actual practice management, they were lacking. There was no real way of saying, how do I manage the business side of my practice here, right? So we're not going to call it a practice management, because obviously people are going to get confused. Let's call it a business management. Is there a business management system that's needed? And that was our vision when we started out. There should be a way of managing the business aspects of your practice with making good decisions based on data. And we decided, okay, we're going to form a company. In late 2015, we formed a company. We released our first product at the end of 2016 or early 2017. We had a soft launch, then a hard launch in 2017. So 17, 18, 19, we have had 3 years in business, and we have learned an incredible amount of information, because I must have talked to at least 5,000 different practice owners and dentists over in different shows and customers and all. And now is it when we are really starting to scratch the surface of what we may need in a proper business management software. Mm-hmm. And as Gina, as you say, I don't think we'll ever be able to build what I thought as a naive entrepreneur and a business owner to say, hey, I'm going to build this, but it's going to take a village. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a group of companies to really come together and solve that need. What my hope is, You can do this with just a few, not needing a true village, meaning not needing 15 different providers to be able to do what's needed to be done in terms of IT and business management services for an office. So that's my long-winded introduction to practice my numbers.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I gave you, I guess, China as an example. And I have to tell you, I mean, okay, so there are a couple of reasons why you cannot build a true practice management software in dentistry because, first of all, you know, when we look outside of dentistry and we look at software that pretty much covers everything, you know, for example, like Salesforce, I mean, the amount of resources that it takes to build a software like, you know, like Salesforce is, you know, very few companies can touch, you know, maybe Henry Schein, but then they're in a different, they have a different role model. I mean, business model, that's not what they do. And also—
It's also a question of opportunity, Gina. If you are Salesforce, and you could build a software like that, you're not going to build that software just because dentists need it. They're going to build that software because the whole world needs it. Dentistry, we sometimes get confused by how big dentistry is, and I don't disagree with that. The dental industry is large, but compared to the rest of the world, it's a speck, right?
Yeah.
And you cannot invest. Nobody can invest hundreds of millions of dollars to build something like Salesforce, which truly could actually end up, now, if they ever decided to invest in dentistry.
They
but
could.
It's a huge investment. They could. But you're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars of investment to get there. And nobody will be able to get there. And you don't want to wait for somebody to get there. Instead, you have to piecemeal it together.
Right. And there are other challenges, like once you have that type of software, you need to convert to that software and you need to, you know, you really need to, if you're doing so many different things, you got to do all of them well. It's like having a dental office where there's one dentist who does everything exceptionally well, from implants to SSCs and pulpotomies and space maintainers and braces and root canals. I mean, this is like a super dentist who does everything at the same time equally well. Not possible. Cannot be done. Same thing with software. There are certain things that some companies are better at. There are certain things that other companies, you got to have focus. You got to have, you know, you can do other things to kind of add value. You got to have focus. And your software focuses on something very specific, very granular. You do metrics. So tell me why metrics are important and what are the ways that we can, you know, use a practice management software or metric software, number software to grow our practices.
Yeah, absolutely. I think any business, there is nothing you can do, meaning you can't drive a car, meaning that's a very, very, very simple analogy without knowing where you're going, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a business that you're running without clear understanding on if you're doing good or bad, you don't know where you're going. Yeah, of course, you can look at your bank account, if it's growing or shrinking, meaning people have said all kinds of, I would venture out into stupid stuff like that. So just take a look at your bank account and you should be happy or unhappy. It doesn't work like that, okay? If you have a practice and you want to grow, you have to find out where are the problems and which are the areas you want to grow at. Going back to a business, every business should know what their denominators are. I mean, what is their production per hour? How much does it cost them to open the office per hour? Now, the production per hour is actually lower than their overhead per hour. Well, there's a problem. And if there's an insurance company paying them for production per hour that's lower than their BAM per hour, well, you obviously know that's not going to work. So that's one thing, is understanding high level. These are the things that you don't have to look every single day, right? These are the things you look at once in a while. Okay, what is my production per hour? What am I doing? These are strategic. These are high level things that you would look at these numbers once a quarter, once in 6 months, you'll actually try to understand how is my business doing? Is it healthy or not? And then there's day-to-day numbers. One example that I translate down is, let's say you have goals. And let's be very, very materialistic and capitalistic and say, my high-level goal is to make as much money as I want. Okay? Let's just do that.
That's a worthy goal. That's a worthy goal.
Yeah, sure. That's a worthy goal. But what does that goal mean to others? That's the bigger question now. So let's say the goal is I want to take home $500,000. And if that's the goal, how do you translate that goal for your staff members? How do you make people drive towards that goal? Because you, as a dentist and as a business owner, you have certain impact on what things get done. But you need to get your work done through other people, because you can't do everything yourself. You can't go sterilize all the instruments. You can't call all the patients back. You have to be able to translate what your goal is to others. And if you tell your goal, my goal is to make $500,000 a year, your front office is going to say, uh-huh. And your hygienist is going to say, sure. And your assistant is going to probably roll their eyes and walk the other way. It's like, great, I'll work right on that, doctor. I'm all for you. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with those goals? And you start to work backwards from those goals to say, okay, I want to make $500,000. That means if my overhead is 50%, I need to produce $1 million. If I need to produce $1 million, I have figured out how am I going to produce myself and the rest of it, my hygienist, what that split would be. If let's say I decide a good number to go by is, you know, 30% is hygiene. That's a good number to go by. That doesn't necessarily make it bad if you're if you are a little bit higher, a little bit lower, and you drive your team to say, okay, hygiene needs to be at a particular number, and that's still not translatable. You can't quite tell your hygienist, I want hygiene production to be 30% of my business. It mm-hmm. means nothing to them. You again go down to a deeper level, make a goal that's pertinent for them, that makes sense for them. They can impact with their day-to-day work that goal. So how do we get down to the hygiene goal? You need to make sure a lot of your patients are coming back for an appointment. You need to make sure every patient that comes in is offered a fluoride. So you measure that goal. Now that goal is relatable to a hygienist, and you're measuring that goal and you're perhaps bonusing them on that goal. So you take your high level goals and you bring them, boil them down to individual staff members. You keep them accountable, keep yourself accountable, and then you do this on a regular basis and see what's working and evolve what's working. And we can talk about doctor goals, we can talk about treatment acceptance. There's so many different things, but at the end of the day, a metric software is going to help you achieve your high level goals by defining and breaking down those high level goals into lower level goals.
You know, I really love what you just said. And the truth is, you know, I will admit that unfortunately, I don't do it. Well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, I don't do it in my practice. And again, because when I started my practice and when my practice sort of was established, you know, at that time, we didn't have anything like this. And so, you know, I did a lot of numbers. I just did them by hand, you know. The numbers were always there. It just took forever to extract them, and you could never get the same degree of, you know, calibration and you know, obviously, you know, parse that data in so many different ways as you can with software. But the numbers were there, so you could do some basic calculations. So I've never done that before with the software, but I love this concept because, a lot, you know, and I talk a lot about clarity, and explaining to you, it's not enough for you to say, I need a productive schedule, right? You need to explain to them specifically what it looks like when the schedule is productive. If you expect your front office to schedule productively, if you want your hygienist scheduling, they need to understand specifically, very clearly, what it looks like when they're successful. What else? I mean, what else are we looking at in terms of, you know, these metrics benefiting our practices?
Well, sharing expectation on some of the basic things is also becomes very important sometimes. And it happens, not sometimes, it happens very often that people are not even realizing that you were supposed to do a certain thing a certain way, and it's not communicated and it's done willy-nilly. And if you're not tracking things, here's an example. Patients are coming in and they fail their appointment. And if you don't have a clear policy on what to do with those failed appointments, every person on the front desk, meaning, you know, for example, in your office, you have multiple people up front. And if you don't track it and you don't train them, each person is gonna make their own decision. But if you measure something and monitor something on a regular basis, which you don't have to go, and again, this is not rocket science. What I am doing is not rocket science, okay? You could do what I'm doing by just going into your schedule and running some of these reports and some of this, counting the patients and figuring out and creating Excel spreadsheets and Google Docs and Post-it notes. It can be done. It was done before. It was just not done very efficiently. And you'll be spending hours and hours of your precious time that you should be spending with your family and growing the office and the staff on some of this stuff. So we make it simpler. But if you don't do this, there is no expectation. And people don't even understand, in a lot of cases, what are things costing them? What are certain patients costing them? What are certain insurances costing them? And they just make decisions because they heard it somewhere, saw it somewhere on Facebook, some guy saying something, oh, you should do that, and you should go do ClickFunnels, or you should do blah. And they just go in and jump right in into that thing without that. So let's say they heard about some cool new Wiz marketing platform, and they decided to put in $15,000, $20,000 in there. And they have no idea if it's working. Now, if you don't measure the outcome down to dollars and cents, say how many patients came from there, how much money was generated from there, you have no idea if that thing was a good thing for you or not. And that's where practice by numbers comes in, because it's not just measuring your clinical side, your productive side, it's also measuring your marketing side to actually see, hey, did you just spend $10,000 on a particular marketing campaign? Let's measure how much money was made by that campaign. So just don't go out and do it, okay? Another aspect is CERC, right? CERC is a great example, and Perlman is a good friend, and I've had arguments and discussions with him. CERC is an incredible machine, meaning it's a platform. It helps your practice, but it's not for everyone, okay? Mm-hmm. Not understanding what your BAM is, not understanding how much money is coming in and going out, and supply reps and coming and telling you, hey doctor, looks like we can save you all your lab costs. And you don't even understand what your lab costs are, and are your lab costs a problem or not. Now your lab costs were at 5%, which is just fine from a national average standpoint. Your supplier rep just saved you 0.5% or 1% on your lab cost, and your CERC lease just costs you $1,500 a month. And guess what? Now you need one more assistant to actually know CERC, and good luck finding that assistant. And not understanding what everything costs you, what your BAM is, what your overheads are, and if supply overhead was a problem or not, and you make a decision just because it looks nice and shiny. That's where practice by numbers comes in, because you don't have to make that decision. You don't have to. You can tell your supplier rep, let me see if my supply is a problem, and let me see if that's actually a real issue before I jump in and make that decision. So in a lot of cases, these are numbers that you use. Like Gina, you said, we have users that go a whole gamut of where some of them use the software every single day, because they're tracking, they're doing their daily huddle in it, they're tracking how the hygienist is scheduled, they're tracking the yesterday's performance, today's performance, they're doing patient follow-ups in it. And the other extreme is where they log in every other week and they just look at overall, are my trends looking good? Are my hygienists in general looking good? Are people falling off the wagon? I have three associates. Are my associates introducing, or actually even more importantly, diagnosing at a good level? Are they pushing too many crowns? Is there a treatment acceptance issue going here? So that's the other end, which they use practice by numbers for a spot check. Make sure things don't go off the rails, because it does happen, especially as the practices get bigger.
You know, you can crunch some numbers and you can get a very simple, okay, this doctor's production per hour is this, and this doctor's production per hour is this, but it still doesn't tell you the whole story. Like, what's the difference? So go ahead.
Yeah, it's like Sherlock Holmes, right? You found a smoking gun.
Yeah.
What do you do now? I mean, you still have to dig deeper. And I think that's where you're going, right?
That's exactly what I'm doing. How do I fix this problem? I've discovered a problem. I've discovered a real problem. I have one dentist. And again, this is not in any way, you know, a judgment against anyone. But I've discovered that one dentist is doing a lot more with everything is the same. Everything is the same. Experience, materials, supplies, facility, hours, patients. Everything is the same. Their time in my practice. Numbers are different. And I don't know what is causing that. So we started to look at the numbers that practice by numbers served up. And we weren't just looking now at production per hour or, you know, how many days they worked, or we looked at everything. We were really able to dial in and figure out what the difference was. And what we found is that the difference actually came from the number of indirect restorations completed for one doctor versus the other. Now, it still doesn't tell us at that point, do we have a doctor who is, you know, maybe a little more aggressive? And again, you put multiple dentists in the same room and you're going to get different opinions. That's why they call it a differential diagnosis. That's why they call it a treatment plan with options. There's certain things that I'm comfortable recommending more than others on different experience. I mean, I'm teaching to the choir here because I'm talking to dentists who understand that. So it doesn't necessarily mean that one is better than the other, but I need to understand what's going on. And actually the finding was really different. And I had a friend of mine on this show before, Dr. Chris Phelps, who talks about principles of influence. And, you know, one of the things that he talks about is that sometimes the sequence in which you present treatment plan actually influences how these treatment plans are presented. And I would have never thought of looking into that. Now, it makes sense. And I'll tell you why it makes sense. It's sort of like, it's a comparison principle, right? So the way it works is, I'm going on a tangent here, but I think it's valuable. If you put your hand in the water, right? And it's warm water, it's warm. And if it, you know, put it in the hotter water, it's hot. And you put it in the cold water and you feel that it's cold. But if you go from cold to hot right away without that medium, you know, room temperature water, then it's going to feel much warmer by contrast, right? So, this is the same. This is the same type of thing. When we present a treatment plan, if we go in and we say, you know, this is a filling, and we talk to patients a lot about different options, and you know, sometimes we get into this, you know, Greek and Latin, and we lose patients. We lose patients. They don't know what, you know, we're talking about half the time. So what happens is they look at the number. That's how they make a decision. And so they'll look at the number and they'll say, well, this is $90. I can afford $90. And then this is $120. Well, I can kind of afford $120. And this is $700. Whoa. Like, you know, what happened there? And so usually they'll pick $120 because they don't know. So they'll just poke in the middle. They'll pick $120. And sometimes they'll pick the cheapest. And sometimes, depending on their emotional state, now we think we're logical people who use facts to make decisions. We're not. We use emotions and then we'll use facts to justify the decisions that we just made. So we'll pick based on what feels right. And it could be one or the other, or it could be the contrast. So this is not something that I would have looked at. But when I started to look because of practice by numbers, and I knew these are the numbers that I needed to look, and then I was like, well, you know, why is this doctor closing more direct restorations and this one is closing more indirect? And when I started to look at It was the difference in how they, it's the sequence in which they explained the treatment plan. And so what happened is one doctor anchored the patient on a, you know, this is the best, this is what we can do. But if for some reason it doesn't work, we could probably do this other thing. It's not great, you know, but it's affordable, but it's not what I would put in my mouth. Whereas the other one would start with, okay, these are your options. We can do this, but I don't recommend it. And then he worked up. And whenever he worked them up, at some point, because they already heard a lower number, that high number just all of a sudden became too expensive. I would have never, I knew that that was the case because I've studied principles of persuasion, but I would have never known to look at that unless I had practiced my numbers and it pointed me in that direction. And the same thing with everything, recall, hygiene, you know, we tell our hygienists we want to schedule appointments chairside. Now, most patients or most doctors rather would say, I want 100% of those appointments scheduled chairside. Well, that's not realistic, right?
No.
And we don't want it because some of those patients are not showing up. We want to pre-schedule people we can trust with appointments. And we don't
there's also one more thing, meaning you can't just take a number and say, I want to be at 100%. I'll tell you one thing, nobody on our platform is at 100%.
No.
And that's why you can compare and say, hey, what are the median practices doing? What does that hygiene pre-appointment rate look like? It's not 100%. I think our 50th percentile, meaning that more than half of our practices are in the low 80s. And to get to 90th percentile, even then you're not at 95 or 98%. I don't know what the number is, but it never gets to 100%. So you don't want to apply to it. But with that said, especially for big practices, and maybe I should need to have another podcast, somebody who has a startup practice and talk about what to do in startups. But in a practice like yours, which is multiple hygienists, multiple doctors, all things being equal, which is your patients and your front office staff, there shouldn't be a major difference in performance of your hygienists or performance. If you have three or four hygienists, yeah, you don't want every one of them to be 100%. But if you're one of your hygienists has a rate of pre-appointment at 85%, and or three of your hygienists at 85%, and two of them at 55%, well, all things being equal, it doesn't make sense. Why would they be 30% lower? And it happens all the time because guess what? In a big practice, what are you going to do? You're going to go count the number of patients for each hygienist and then see which ones have their appointments. It's not practical.
No.
We make it simple. All things being equal, your providers should be performing at a similar level, meaning if you have two general dentists, they should be providing at a similar level. All things being equal, if they're diagnosing patients and their treatment plan distribution should be looking pretty similar. If they're doing crowns, direct and indirect, the direct and indirect ratio, which we show, should be pretty similar. They shouldn't be swinging wildly. Now, yours could be different because you may be going into the office and only doing crowns and coming back out might not be doing, but that's a different situation because it's things are not equal, but between your associates and your staff, the same thing applies for your front office. Multiple front office people, their performance of closing new patients should be pretty similar. And that's where you come in. And sometimes you don't look at it every day. Sometimes you look at it once a week. Sometimes you look at it every other week. There are practices that you look at it once a month. And if you don't have a good way of monitoring it, things can go under the radar for months, right? We have seen cases where one of the hygienists stops pre-appointing and the owner doesn't find out for 6 months and then find that, oh my God, this hygienist did pre-appoint and we were 6 months from now, what they find out is their schedule is not full. And that's a big impact. So, and the same thing concept is with the front office people. If they are picking up phones, they should be closing new patients at the same rate. So that helps. And looking at averages, national numbers within our system, so we have about 1,400 practices in our system right now, and we show you numbers for, hey, what does it look like across all PBN users? And that's very valuable. So you can actually make a decision to say, what is it? How do the top 10% of practices do it? Does it make sense for me to even, like, I've heard consultants say 90% of your recall patients should be current on their appointment. Well, I don't have a single practice that does that. None of them.
Yeah.
That number is just unachievable. There may be a perfect practice out there, but we haven't found one yet. So having those national averages and knowing what to strive for is important.
So, you know, one of the things that sometimes we hear consultants say that, well, just sometimes makes me cringe because I don't know whether they're setting realistic expectations for us. I don't know if there's enough. So we talk about industry averages, but we need to really look into, like, what are we talking about in terms of industry? There are all kinds of practices out there. Group practices, small practices, corporate practices, boutique practices, practices that do specialties, practices that, you know, do niche procedures. Their numbers are going to be different. So you really need to be comparing apples to apples. And then also,
absolutely.
Yeah. And then also, I mean, there are things that are being thrown around, and I had a little bit of a tangent earlier, but, you know, I had to look this up earlier. 10X, you know, we're expected to 10X our practices. First of all, 10X is an engineering term, okay? To 10X something in a short period of time, you need to mass produce it, which is not going to happen in dentistry. And frankly, if someone came into my practice and 10X'd it, I wouldn't be able to run it. There's no way to 10X my practice in a short period of time.
I completely agree, meaning good friends, right? You're and mine both, good friends are consultants. Now, but the thing is, Gina, we have to say that out loud. Not all consultants are the same, meaning there are incredible people who have 25, 30 years of experience behind them, a huge following. They work with a ton of people, extremely well respected in the industry. But then you have charlatans out there who suddenly got a Facebook megaphone and they can create ClickFunnels ads and post 10X and blah and blah and blah, 7 figures. I mean, we get contacted. I'll tell you one thing. As practiced by numbers, we get contacted every other week by a new consultant wanting to build 100, 200, 500 practice empire consulting. But what are they doing right now? Consulting with one office. How many practices do you work with? One or two, but by next year, I'm going to have 100. I'm like, yep, so you only 99 shots. That's it. Perfect. It's
that's awesome. A reasonable goal, you know. Okay, so look, you know, I looked something up today, and I don't know how it happened. I was talking to someone, and, you know, it was a nice conversation, and then all of a sudden, we went into this, you know, research, and you like numbers, right? So you're a numbers person. So here's an interesting statistic. So 53% of people on dating sites admit to grossly exaggerating, you know, themselves online to make themselves look better, right?
Yeah.
They admitted to grossly exaggerating. Almost 100%, 90 and over, have been caught in small white lies to kind of embellish themselves and make themselves look, you know, bigger and, you know, taller and, you know, more gifted. Or unfortunately, and here's the funny number, in business, 40% of people that we do business with are exaggerating grossly their competence, their experience, you know, their influence, you might say. And so interestingly, like if you know, 40%, what does that mean? That means that for every 10 dental professionals, there's four. Again, you're probably thinking that I'm making this up because four is a, you know, pretty, you know, specific number. Four out of 10 are complete charlatans who are making stuff up. And they're making themselves sound a lot more important and influential than they really are.
So it's hard for me to respond to that because I don't know where you're getting that number, but I can tell you the number is a lot higher if you just look at a subset of people posing to give advice, okay? That number is more like 8 or 9 out of 10 are exaggerating their capabilities and what they can do by a gross margin.
Right. And the interesting thing with numbers is sometimes you can twist the numbers whichever way you want to argue your point. So where I'm going with that, it's important that you know and understand your numbers. And I'll tell you, I was looking today at something that was, you know, we started talking about ClickFunnels earlier and we both laughed and laughed and laughed. And I started to look so the advice was that, you know, these are some ClickFunnels and some marketing campaigns that, you know, if you sign up for a program, we'll give them to you and it's going to be. And so they use some words, you know, the feel good buzzwords like, you know, don't make your own mistakes, learn from us, reliable, proven results. And I started to look through and I thought, you know what, how do you measure marketing? You measure the ROI. You gotta know the numbers.
Even then, it's not an exact science, but measure the ROI.
It's very difficult actually to measure ROI. You don't know how many calls you're getting missed. You don't know. And so let's say you're doing Facebook marketing, which was the case in this particular situation. So Facebook marketing is interesting because in the last 2 years, Facebook admitted to misrepresenting their view numbers. But somehow that didn't come up in the conversation. It was all, you know, buzzwords and feel good words and like, you know, you're going to become an influential member of your community and you know, that kind of stuff and fill the empty chairs but fill empty chairs with what? High value patients. What does that mean to be a high value patient? What numbers do you need to do? Are we going to drop insurance or are we going to add insurance? And you go online and you ask for advice. And you and I have been around for, I hate to say I've been around for a long, you've been around for a long time. I'm a spring chicken. But anyway, we've been around long enough to where, you know, you go online and you ask an advice. And advice is usually, you know, non-specific enough to where no one really can help you there. Because we don't know what your situation is. We don't know what the problems are. You got to start with some actual real hard numbers. And you got to have other statistics there. But it starts with a lot of touchy-feely, you know, it's hard to find good people and, you know, employees, they just don't want to work there. And we really got to kick up some marketing. And we, you know, the phone, we ask two words I absolutely hate that are so prominent in dentistry is always and never. Because it's never always and it's never, never. Anytime I ask a question, do you do this? Always.
Always. Yes.
Always. How about that? No, we never do that. Well, when you look at the actual numbers, you find out.
It's a different story.
It's a different story. The story is in the numbers. You got to know the numbers to understand the story. And so when someone comes out and says, you know, my practice needs help. What do you think I should do? And so people will come out and say, sign off insurance, take on PPOs, take on HMOs. And then someone will say, drop insurance. And then someone else, you know, will say, look, you just got to do the click funnels. Funnels. It's all about the funnels.
There's an incredible amount of noise and people who are trying to grow. And I'll tell you one thing. There's a lot of good people as well. Gina, you have given incredible advice. Okay. I have seen you, meaning I've seen you on Facebook for the past, at least as long as I have been on Facebook, and you've been on Facebook a lot, not Facebook, but Dentaltown, lot longer than I have. And I don't even have a login. It's Aditi, my wife, she was just avid reader, and she marked you as followed you, and then, like, yeah, she's in, you give advice to people, meaning you will create a thread, meaning you'll respond to a thread, and it's not going to be it's not going to be here, download my form. And then you can track that person and you'll remarket them crap after that. You actually write 2, 3, 4 pages of response and you try to help that person, try to elicit more information, clarifying questions, try to help that person. That doesn't happen anymore on Facebook. It used to happen on Dentaltown.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen on Facebook. Facebook is just become so, there's so many clicks and people selling you discounts for this, vendors and everybody has their own group. So it's getting, Facebook has become so noisy that there are people just, I know several that have just quickly, completely turned off Facebook. And frankly, if I could turn off Facebook, from all of the dental advice and the groups and everything, I would do in a heartbeat. But being a vendor like you, I cannot. Neither can you.
No. Plus, I have, I have inherited a little group that I find incredibly entertaining. So I spend a lot of time there. But here's the thing. And you're right. I give advice because I can't help myself. It's not, I don't know how to monetize this thing. I mean, I got to be able to monetize this thing. But
no, I know how. You just need to sell a lifetime membership.
Oh, my God. That's such a great idea. I should do this. I should look into this because I know it works, and then you can just keep doing that, right? But okay, so, and here's the thing. When I post on Facebook, and I still do this on Facebook, I'm the only one who does this on Facebook, this long, and I figured out how to do paragraphs on Facebook just to make sure that, people, can read if they want to. But sometimes they'll respond with TLTR, too long to read. And I'm like, well, if it's too long to read, then why did you ask me? You want shortcuts? I'm sure someone can sell it to you.
They want bullet points.
Bullet points. Yeah.
They want
cliff
bullet
notes.
Points.
Cliff notes, bullet points. Yes. And then, we'll give you a membership and then you could just download the content. And here's the thing. If you disagree with someone, I mean, then you express a different point of view, then you're toxic. And, we don't want you in the group because... this is where we're nice. We're all about being nice. And so, yeah. So, you have to be careful with advice. But again, the numbers, and it's very easy to misunderstand the numbers, and it's very easy to get confused with the numbers. It's very easy to get discouraged. I mean, one of the criticism of your type of software is that there's so many numbers, which is fine. Don't look at all the numbers. Pick them. Pick your battle.
No, not at all. If you look at our platform and you go into the advanced, meaning there are 600 different KPIs. No sane person should be looking at more than, 10, 15 numbers. Everybody should be looking at pertinent numbers for yourself, but that pertinent number for yourself is different for you versus your hygienist versus your front office. So each person should be responsible for a few. You shouldn't have more than, maybe five is too many for each person. Five is too many. There should be one or two numbers that each person is responsible for. If you're looking at more than that for each person, well, then you're doing something wrong. But that number will change depending on the person, depending on the practice, what state they are in. Are they a startup practice? Are they a Medicaid practice? Are they a highly motivated cosmetic whole mouth practice? It's different. Are they based on emergency? It's different for every person. And that's why we have that many numbers. It's not so that people's eyes would glaze over.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's like, looking at your numbers is like looking at my advice. Too much, too long, give me the bullet points. But yeah, I mean, you want to look at a handful of your numbers that you're looking at from time to time to time, because you're going to be comparing them, these numbers to these numbers before and to, to your goal. And you also want to look at some numbers that are related to what it is that you're doing. But here's the thing, the consultants that I know and trust, and I would absolutely put my own practice in their hands, like Sandy Perdue. I was talking to another one, Carrie Weber. They have your product. I just talked to them. I think it was one of not the last podcast, but the one before. We talked to them, and again, that's the product that they use. And so, and when you have people that you've known for years that you would trust your practice to, and they recommend your product and they use your product and they prefer to you for their customers to use their product, then you believe them, because they didn't just, crash an influencer course. They've been around for a long time. They've helped a lot of people. They know what they're talking about. They've shared their content many, many times. In fact, their content has been repurposed by, the newer up and coming people. So, from that standpoint, when Sandy Perdue told me, check this out, there was absolutely no question. I didn't even need to look at other products. I mean, I still did because that's what I do. But, I need information. I like information. I thrive on information. I need information to make decisions. But, when she recommended it for me, that was absolutely what I needed. That was the handoff. So anyway, I'm going to let you go. We've been chatting for a while. I had fun talking to you. Unfortunately, I didn't get to talk to you a lot of the VOD. I'm looking forward to maybe seeing you next year. There's also a Business of Dentistry conference coming up, and not what you're thinking. This one is by the ultimate authority on the business of dentistry. It's put together by the Dental Economics Magazine. Dr. Chris Salerno is the chief editor of the publication. Our mutual friend, Josh Austin, is reviewing products for the publication. Your software was featured in Dental Economics a few months ago, which, you know, I know is a great honor. And, you know, it was a very great evaluation by someone who understands technology. So you know, that might be another conference if our listeners are interested in. That's the conference to go. I don't have the dates. I might want to just, you know, slide them in the show notes, and then maybe, you know, I'm going to try to be there. I've missed the last couple ones, but I definitely want to go this year. So if you're interested, we might see you there.
We got an invite too. So we got an invite for sponsorship and attendance. So I hope to see you there as well, Gina.
Absolutely. Sounds like fun. Enjoy the rest of your week. Tell your wife I said hello, and I appreciate everything, you know, her friendship over the years, and I'll see you on our Facebook groups.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me. And I look forward to hearing this podcast.
It's going to be fun. I can't wait.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Smiles. Today's episode was brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. You can learn more about Yappy by visiting www.yappyapp.com. If you have any suggestions for future guests, or if you have any questions for us, you can reach out to Dr. Gina directly. Send your email to drgina@yappycentral.com. You can also find the email in our show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review on iTunes or on any of the apps that you're listening from. It's greatly appreciated. And as always, thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.